Remaker's Mark Hidden Gems 2, Brotherhood of the Wolf. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Remaker's Mark. Here we are in our second Hidden Gems episode, where we are discussing the 2001 French horror action wolfy thing film, Brotherhood of the Wolf. With me, as always, are my friends Andy Wicks, Jeremy Nelson, Lee Wolfenstein, Mark Josting, and myself, Kyle Dillahunt. I will be your host this fine evening. So, first, we're going to talk a little bit about our history with the film and why we picked it, and what we know about it for those of us who have not seen it. And then we're going to take a little break and we're going to watch the film, and then we're going to talk about what we thought about it having seen it. So, Jer, this was your pick. Actually, you know what? Let me flip that around. Let's have a little bit of a summary of the film. Andy, do you feel ready to do a summary? Let everybody know a little bit know about this movie.
Yeah, I've been practicing my French for weeks now.
Oh, very good.
Brotherhood of the Wolf. I'm not going to read the French title.
Mark, Andy, can you just put just a little bit more surrender in that?
Wow. Brotherhood of the Wolf is a 2001 French historical horror action film. It is loosely based on a real-life series of killings that took place in France in the 18th century in the famous legend of the Beast of Gévaudan, which I apologize to France for that. Parts of the film were shot at the Château de Roquetaillade, also apologies to France. The film has several extended swashbuckling fight scenes with martial arts performances by the cast mixed in, making it unusual for a historical drama. Hilarity ensues.
And nary a croissant was eaten.
Nary a baguette to be found.
Sadly. Although maybe the battle scenes, if we slowed them down even more, might be a baguette in there somewhere.
I'm sure they were on the craft services table.
There are a lot of references to other movies that we'll get to, and also Mortal Kombat in that last fight scene.
Oh, nice. Totally. Good call.
Thank you.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Awesome. Jer, this was your pick, so you chose to represent this film. So tell us a little bit why this is a hidden gem for you and your history with it.
Sure. Well, so in 2001, and actually I think it was a couple years after that, when it made its way over here, I remember seeing trailers for it and being very intrigued by the combination of a lot of what seemed like a lot of different elements. And the fight scenes looked really cool from the trailer. And when I first rented it back then, I wasn't quite sure what to expect. I thought that it was more of a horror movie based on what I had seen of it. And so I was renting it, expecting it to be a little bit more scary than it turned out to be. But it really was an action movie from a different perspective than what you typically will see here in American cinema. And it really latched onto it and ended up finding it on, I bought it online finally when it came out, because it took forever to come out on DVD. So I finally bought it and watched it a few more times after I owned it. And just, it's been one of those movies that I love showing people because practically no one's heard of it. And it's got a little bit of everything in it, and it's a really different kind of storytelling than what we're used to. It's kind of the same reason I really like Snowpiercer. It's a different way to look at the action movie.
Interesting. Yeah, my history with this is I remember the trailer, and I remember it being very stylized, very like fancy, over the top. And so we'll see if the movie, I have not seen the movie, we will see if it lives up to that, how that fits in with the overall mood of the film. But yeah, I remember the trailer being very dramatic and very kind of over the top in all the ways. So I'm excited to see what that looks like in real movie execution.
I really hope that you guys like it, not the least of which is because I suggested it. But I just think it's a movie that people who like movies should like.
Nice. I like that description.
Yeah.
All right, so now we are going to take a little pause here, maybe put in some jaunty music, maybe a little French this time. We'll see if I can find some. Here we go, archive.org. And after you hear said jaunty, maybe French music, we will come back and we will have seen the movie and we will comment on it hilariously.
Through the magic of time.
Through the magic of time. All right, back in a few.
Zooby, zooby, zoo. Zooby, zooby, zoo. Zooby, zooby, zoo. Zooby, zoo, zooby, zoo. Mon Dieu, qu'ils sont doux.
Okay, here we are back. We have now watched the film and ready to talk about it. So that was indeed quite a movie. That was really very interesting. It was a lot of movie. Jer, if I remember correctly, in the first part, you described it as a movie that movie lovers should like or love or something like that. Do you maybe want to talk a little bit about that? I think it kind of ties into our first point here, which is that this movie has a lot. So do you want to talk a little bit about that and what led to your enjoyment of that? And we can chime in as well.
Well, I think one of the problems with most action movies that we expect here in the U.S., especially kind of the big summer blockbusters, is a lot of eye candy, not a lot of story. And one of the things that I really like about this is it's got some very cool eye candy moments, but it's also a really interesting story. A convoluted one at times, a confusing one, sure. But I think that it really shows how movie storytelling works in cultures other than our own. European, obviously, is what is represented here. But I think that it's a cool way to realize that, oh, it's not just about, you know, blowing stuff up or watching a car turn into a robot over and over and over again. There's much more that could happen and still be a really like fun movie to watch.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, one thing that can be said about this film is, were there something to explode or a car to transform, I would not put it past it. Because this movie has a lot of things, and it would not have, I mean, it would have seemed out of place, but I've been like, you know, I'm going with it. This is cool.
Made it work.
They made it work, exactly. It just went from a dune and buggy or a horse and buggy into a transformer. Magic. Jer, why don't you give just kind of a brief summary? I mean, we've talked about it a little bit in the first part, but do you maybe want to talk a little bit about the elements of this film and what makes it so grand in all its ways?
Well, sure. At its core, it's kind of a thriller mystery. And it is centering around two characters, a taxidermist of all things, and his friend from America, the Native American Manny was his name, I believe.
Manny,
yep.
Manny.
And he gets called to this particular region of France during the early stages of the French Revolution, or middle stages, or whatever. And so it's kind of all in this backdrop of the French Revolution. And he gets sent in to investigate these killings by this monster and to essentially kind of debunk it or catch it, whatever it is that ends up happening. And so there's sort of these elements of this crime drama, trying to figure out who is doing or what is doing these killings. But then there's also these just kind of randomly placed really cool fight scenes. Manny apparently is a Native American / kung fu artist or martial artist. And so he just kind of wanders around silently kicking a lot of ass. But then there's this, you know, this whole odd secret society thing. And there's, you know, a lot of metaphoric components of the revolution and things. And so it's it becomes much like Andy said in the first one. It's historical action, drama, mystery, thriller, whatever. Like that's, it just has a lot of pieces to it. And it's really hard to kind of fit it into a genre, which is probably why I didn't really understand what I was going to watch when I saw the trailer, because who could?
Right.
So is that what you were asking?
Yeah, that's spot on. Totally. Yeah. I just wanted to get a mood painting, as it were, because it's pretty hard to lock that down because there is so much going on there. And frankly, I thought it was pretty darn enjoyable. Not a lot of it made sense. And we'll maybe touch on that in part two of our discussion here a little bit. There were some things that were kind of like, This feels weird. This is a lot of everything. But I did enjoy the film overall. I think it was maybe a little bit too long. That's okay. There were some things that, again, didn't make sense. But I like that they kind of went where they did. When we were doing the sort of the pre-production notes and passing that around, I chalked it up to The Matrix. To me, it felt like The Matrix freed up directors to do sort of the melting pot of genres and styles and everything that, you know, that did anime, action, kung fu. It did, you know, everything and was a huge success because of that. So I feel like I could see this project getting greenlit or getting a bigger budget because of that. You know, there's certainly some John Woo stuff in there. There's a lot of kung fu. I think that, you know, it makes sense from a timing perspective as far as when this came out in 2001, whereas The Matrix came out in 1999, that this seems very much influenced by that. And I like that it did that. I like that it was that there's kung fu and wolves and, yeah, like a Mortal Kombat spear in the last the last battle. I think it makes it very unique. It's not just, you know, it reminded me a lot of the movie Sleepy Hollow, the Tim Burton movie, which I have a big history with, and I enjoy that movie. I think the plot is very similar to that, like sort of someone comes in who, you know, is somewhat of an expertise. That one is a little bit more of a false expertise, but and then all hell breaks loose. So I think the story could have been that, but then goes that much more beyond that. What do you guys think? Did you enjoy it overall? Was it too much?
I thought it was enjoyable. I had my qualms with it, but it was certainly entertaining. If nothing else, it was entertaining.
Yeah.
You know, I second the you know, the most prevalent comment that there was a lot of stuff there, and mm-hmm. and not in the sense that that we said that about Gone with the Wind, where there's just a lot of content, and there's a lot of content in this movie, but there was a lot of styles that were being approached, a lot of filmmaking things that were being attempted, and storytelling things. You know, genres is a thing that we've hinted at, where it's a detective film and it's a monster film and it's a kung fu film. And it's a period film. It's just so many things. One of my reactions is that it's kind of disorienting being that many things. But the more I think about it, the more impressive it is that it actually kind of makes them cohesive.
Yeah, that it held together in spite of all that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I'm going to watch this again. And I think I'm going to enjoy it more the second time.
Interesting.
I think it's a good point, Mark. I felt there was a lot of elements of this movie that, looking at them kind of as a grouping of elements, didn't make sense and seemed out of place with each other. You know, things like the fact that there's a lot of martial arts experts in 18th century rural France, things like that. Yet at the same time, I really found, like, despite all of the dissonance that was in the film in my viewing of it, in terms of styles and elements and plot points and whatever, I really found myself enjoying the film. It's a beautiful film. The scenery is absolutely gorgeous. A lot of the set pieces are really, really well done. The casting I thought was actually really, really interesting and really well done. So mm-hmm. just kind of despite all of these quirks, you know, things that I think if those elements were in a place in another movie, I don't think I would have liked them. Yet I found myself enjoying it in this one. And I agree, Mark, if I was to watch this again, I think I would enjoy it more.
I think you can just kind of let the story wash over you in a subsequent viewing. You know, here you're trying to process so much, whereas down the road, I think you would just let the mood kind of wash over you. Like I have a hard time with that with music. I have a hard time not having a critical ear upon first listening. And that can be a good thing. It can be okay to have a critical ear, but sometimes I just want it to wash over me, you know, and that's something that I sort of battle personally. I don't know, battle sounds harsh, but you know what I mean? I think you guys are all similar. Like if you've done music production, you've done music performance, like your ear is different than people who have not done that and you hear different things. So it's hard not to do that, to just turn it off and just let it like hit you in a way where you would have been hit as a kid. And yeah. I think like letting this movie do that or allowing it to do that, I think would be a huge benefit for it.
Kyle, we're sympathetic to your plight.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I think the story of this movie, and I honestly didn't realize it was based on a real legend in this area of France. But the story is really quite interesting and quite engaging, even if some of the elements to it are maybe a little clunky or corny or just it would seem to kind of come out of left field. But the story is really well done, and the core of it is engaging enough that it really kept me interested from beginning to end. And there weren't any parts of it where I really felt bored. It was maybe a couple points where I was kind of like, kind of chuckled under my breath, like with the Mortal Kombat sword. But yeah, I really, really enjoyed it.
Mark, you had a good point here about had it gone further in any direction, it could have been significantly different or worse, maybe. And you list off a couple movies here. And I just wondered if you could say those movies and say a little bit about that, because I think those movies are awesome in their own right. And I would just love to hear your thoughts on them.
Sure. With it being all these things like, detectives and monsters and kung fu and a little bit weird, too. I thought that it had this really unique tone that was a lot of different things, but pretty well balanced. And so my comment was that a few ticks in any direction, it could have been Underworld, like if it were a little bit moodier and a little bit more serious. Valhalla Rising, if it were a lot more serious, but a little bit weirder. And Kung Fury, if it were a lot campier.
Yeah.
And we already mentioned Sleepy Hollow, too, and I think that's a pretty good parallel, too, just as is.
Yeah, if that was just like a straight, Jer, what you were thinking maybe it was going to be, like a more straight-up horror movie.
It could have easily been just a kind of straight-up monster movie.
Andy, it seems as though you have a clarification or a point to fix here as far as your sword description. Is that accurate?
Mark was correct. It was Soul Calibur that I was thinking of, not Mortal Kombat. Specifically, yeah. The character of I believe Ivy Valentine. Is that her name?
Yep, Ivy Valentine.
Got it. All right, we'll put a link to that in the show notes. But that's important. It does. It did look very Scorpion-esque. I will give you that. But it looks even more Ivy Valentine.
Maybe little kids shouldn't look at that link.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, Ivy Valentine, the character of Ivy Valentine, is also an Enlightenment era aristocrat, but I guess nice. Everybody in Soul Calibur
was apparently into some BDSM.
As is everybody in Soul Calibur.
She's in
some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, she's into every BDSM.
All of the above. Her multiple choice test scored on all of those. I'd like to talk a little bit more about the story. Andy, I think it was you, either Andy or Mark, touched on like kind of that it went places that I wasn't necessarily expecting it to, especially kind of with the religious aspect versus sort of the pomposity or the, what's the word I'm thinking of, the king, like riches, corruption, I guess. I don't know. Depravity of the king. I thought that was really interesting. Like, I did not expect it to go there at all, and I think that really added to it. Monica Bellucci's character, she plays a maybe prostitute, probably crazy person. No, I don't know. I don't know what her actual role was. Confidant? Like, she worked out of a brothel, but it seems as though she was actually very in tune with everybody involved in this. Was really the only one who knew kind of everything going on.
Yeah, I got kind of like a CIA vibe from her.
Yeah,
that she was. Like I got the she was connected to the Vatican.
Oh yeah, that was it. She was an agent of the Pope.
Got it.
And I guess she took her undercover role, literally.
Very much so. As Monica Bellucci will tend to do. Yeah, I thought that was really, really cool. What did you guys think of that?
I thought she was a great character. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that character. It's that character was very complex, and I love that when she's introduced, she's both a mysterious character. You kind of expect her to fill the role of the mystic, but she's also sort of a love interest. And maybe you might not trust her, so she's kind of a red herring villain. But then also she turns out to be like a secret agent. There's a lot of stuff there too, and I think it's a great character. I would make her reveal more about her earlier on, but it's a lot of good stuff there.
Yeah, when you say that out loud, it makes me realize just how complex of a character it really was. I think you're spot on with that. They did a really good job with that. What else did you guys think about kind of the plot of it? Anything else that stuck out to you that you thought was interesting or maybe superfluous? I mean, I think the girlfriend's role, the kind of young woman of court there, I thought she was okay. Performance-wise, I thought she was fine, but like, I don't know, that role, there was so much going on that I feel like that got lost a bit.
I would agree with that. I mean, that character is definitely the love interest, and I thought that she's going to be a stronger character. And maybe that's a red herring too, because they set her up as this aristocratic young woman, but she's tough. She rides her horse like a man. You know, she's much more brash and much less demure than a lady of the court should be. But in the end, she kind of ends up being a damsel in distress. It's an interesting character that sets up strong, but then they just kind of take her away.
Yeah,
and I think they do that a lot in this film. That they set up one thing and then switch it out with another, and it ends up being like three completely different films, but still tied together. And it is a very strange experience.
Yeah. I feel like I have a hard time in foreign films. Like I think I can tell when someone is overacting, although oftentimes in foreign films, like a whole culture is overacting. Like if you watch a Japanese film, like it feels like mm-hmm. everybody's shouting because that is their way of speaking. You know what I mean? Or Russian. Or I mean, there's lots of different things. But I feel like maybe she wasn't a great actress. Maybe. I don't know. I had a really hard time. Like it's hard to tell how much of that is just that a role is underwritten or underrepresented, or how much of that is the actress. I feel like it was a little of both. I think it did move away from the character quite a bit more than the importance of the role seemed to require. But yeah, I think I wonder if maybe the actress was in above her head a little bit too.
Yeah, I have to wonder. Another thing that they switched on me, I'm surprised that I forgot about it. Given the name of the film is The Brotherhood of the Wolf, you know, I would have expected the religious cult aspect, and I found myself just totally forgetting about it.
Yeah.
And when they finally get to it, I'm like, oh yeah, that's what's going on. Then after I watched it, like, oh yeah, that's what the film is called.
I did that the first three times I watched the movie. Like, forget that this is actually called, the title is referencing this group that I totally forgot about, and then watched it again years later and totally forgot about them again. It's like, oh, that's right.
And they spend so much time on the high society, and just with the aristocrats and the different relationships between them, and you know, alongside of the detective story, you get these notes of politics, and it's distracting. Because they really don't matter.
Well, I think they do a good job of obfuscating that, because at first you're like, oh, I bet it's them. And then you kind of just forget about it, or at least I did. You know what I mean? Like it's again, going back to Sleepy Hollow, I think it's very similar to that, where it's like, ooh, I bet these people are involved. Like they're not good. They're not bad, but they're not good. You know, like you just kind of, you start looking for a reason to think that everyone is the villain, which can be kind of fun in and of itself. But yeah, I think it's a good call.
I was fully expecting one of the characters to actually be the creature.
Yeah,
like in the earlier parts of the movie, I thought, okay, it's going to be one of those. But
yeah, well, and apparently Kyle still thinks there are werewolves in this movie. Yeah, sorry. Given how much is mentioned in our notes.
Well, I keep putting werewolf instead of wolf. Sorry.
And somebody in the notes was like, it was asking what the creature actually was. I think.
Yeah, that's a great question.
Yeah,
and
none of us know.
From what I understand, it is a lion. I mean, it's just a lion that the brother, the guy, had shipped over, and then they just dressed it up in that weird, like, sort of bamboo-y stick armor, just to make it look more like a monster. So it's basically a lion in a monster costume.
It seems a little redundant.
Because a lion isn't scary enough.
Right. Well, and the funnier thing to think about, too, is that bringing a lion to 18th century France, it's not like they're going to be like, hey, look, it's a lion. Because right. None of these people have seen a lion before. So, yeah, no,
they have.
A little redundant. Maybe. I don't know.
Someone's house cat is loose.
The African wildlife was familiar in Europe because of the influence of the Roman Empire for about 1,000 years.
Even in feudal villages?
Especially in feudal villages.
Yeah. And people would have seen illustrations and would have heard the stories from the Colosseum. But they probably wouldn't have seen it in person.
So hence the stick armor.
Yeah. I didn't think about it being a lion, but now that I think of the picture towards the end of the eye, it does look a little lionish, lion-esque.
Yeah, that big gold eye.
Yeah. Yep.
It still feels a little bit big for me to be a lion, but...
It's a big lion.
Yeah, I guess they're big things. They're big cats.
Mm-hmm.
They are the king of the jungle.
Good point. Well, let's talk a little bit about the roles and the performances. So we touched on a couple things. Monica Bellucci, I think, was really, really solid in this. I thought she was great. As Lee said, she was Italian speaking perfect French, which is awesome. Got to give it up to that. And then I wondered if the actress who played, what was her name? Magdalene? No.
Was it Marianne, the other love interest?
Yeah, Marianne. Yep, the other love interest. I thought she was... You know, it started off strong and then just sort of whimpered a little bit, kind of went away. But I have no idea what else the lead did. I don't know if he's like a French action star or something like that. But I thought he was pretty good. I thought he did a good job.
Yeah, he was fine.
He reminded me of Christopher Lambert.
Yeah, I was thinking that too.
Of Highlander fame. He looks like exactly like Christopher Lambert. And is that right, Lambert?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
I kept thinking, watching the film, that this is exactly the sort of film that Christopher Lambert should be in.
Yes. Yep. It was just a little after his time. Not too much, though. I'm looking through his IMDb history, and there's not a lot there. He was in the Red, the Three Colors series from Kieslowski. He was in one of those. So, not too much. Yeah. He was in a movie with Audrey Tautou. I love that.
Whoever the, I don't know the actor's name, that played the bad guy with the misshapen hand.
Yeah, Vincent Cassel.
He was exceptionally creepy, especially at the beginning. Yeah,
he's super creepy.
I mean, the whole reveal of the, oh, I had an arm, it's just deformed, was a little odd. But but yeah, the whole beginnings where he was just that kind of that menacing, looking at everybody through his eyebrows, kind of like he did that well.
Yeah. He was also in Irreversible with Monica Bellucci, which is one of the more painful movies to watch of all time. It's rough. Very good film, but really hard to watch. That was one of my notes, was that Vincent Cassel was creepy.
Yeah.
I didn't see the ultimate reveal coming at all. That surprised me. I mean, I kind of thought maybe he had something to do with it, but not like hidden arm had something to do with it. That needs a manicure kind of thing. Yeah.
Can we talk about Mark Dacascos as the French-Canadian Iroquois Kung Fu ass kicker?
Yes. Please do, Mark.
How can we not? Yeah. This guy was the chairman in Iron Chef America.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I knew I recognized him from somewhere.
Yeah. Also, he's in Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and he's really good.
He's like the next Brandon Lee.
Yeah.
He reminded me of Brandon Lee.
He totally does.
Oh, also he was on Dancing with the Stars.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And as you can imagine, really good.
Yeah, I can totally imagine that. Yeah, that was a weird role. So he is Native American, played by a Hawaiian gentleman who knows Kung Fu, but still has tattoos and face paint. Like, it's, man, there's a lot of appropriation going on there. I don't know if for good or bad, but man. There's just a lot going on, kind of in line with the rest of the film. But yeah, I enjoyed him as an ass kicker. I thought he did a fine job of that. I thought he did very well. But yeah, that one was like that one triggered my wait a minute, sort of filter quicker and more strongly than anything in this movie, which is no small feat.
Yeah, I think that role for me also was the one that it just stuck out as surreal, but I totally forgave it because I loved it.
Yeah, he did totally kick ass. So okay, so what was his role in Iron Chef? He like oversees the court kind of there, or
basically he's called the chairman, and so he oversees it. It's when William Shatner is on Iron Chef America, it's that same role.
Oh my God.
Except when it's a Shatner, they like carry him in on a royal litter.
Of course they do.
I guess Mark Dacascos doesn't get that same same regard.
Not yet. Give him time. I could see it coming. Oh my God, that's funny. That's hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
Now I want to watch that. I mean, I have watched Iron Chef, and I now that you say that, I do recognize it. But geez, I didn't get there at all with that.
Yeah, it's
hilarious.
It's the weirdest thing. Like I don't know what it is, how I keep stumbling on Mark Dacascos' acting roles. They just pop up everywhere for me. And I guess I've seen all four of them now. But
so let's touch a little bit on the filmmaking. So we've talked a bit about how this movie is made, which is all over the place. So there is a lot of slow motion. There is a lot of sort of jerky frame rate stuff. There is a lot of kung fu inexplicably in France. There is some, you know, kind of some ultra violence. There's some horror stuff. So this really is a kitchen sink of genre and filmmaking. I think the movie is stronger for it, and we've touched upon that a little bit. Do you guys have anything else to kind of talk about that, or did it ever take you out of this in a way that was kind of disappointing for you, or did it really just feel like this was its thing and it just was all in? That's how it felt to me.
It seemed like they used a lot of bullet time that was maybe a little excessive.
Yeah.
I thought the CG looked primitive.
But, yeah, the beast itself looked pretty rough. And
at times. Yeah.
The opening fight scene when we are introduced to the two main characters, just when they're, you know, walking down the road and see the, you know, vagabonds or whatever, and just kind of hand-to-hand stick beat them. I loved the cinematography of that scene with the water drops. And I thought that was a super effective use of a technology and a filmmaking that will very quickly get old. But I thought that particular scene did it in a way that makes it feel fresh, and it made it feel as part of the larger story. There were moments that were not like that. And I think now, 15 years later, we are seeing a little too, for a long time, and maybe not so much anymore, but for a long time, we were seeing that type of filmmaking way too much in way too many dumb ways. That's probably still the case, but I just really like that scene. And I will watch that scene a couple times in a row when I watch the movie sometimes.
The one that stood out to me was, actually there might be a couple of these, but there's a dream sequence where the main character has basically a nightmare, and that's a pretty common thing in Hollywood. But the thing that made it stand out to me is the how theatrical it was. That it's cinematographically, yeah, they go to, you know, set paintings on a sound stage, and it's really beautiful. And it's almost framed and executed like it's a painting.
Yeah.
And I mean, like Da Vinci.
None of that crap Van Gogh crap.
Yeah, I'm doing a terrible job about talking about visual arts. I have 3 degrees in it.
I was going to say, it's not like you're an art major. Ah, crap. You know, the one battle if I'm remembering it correctly, they have the battle where inexplicably Monty is just battling a bunch of like village hoodlums, I guess. I don't know. It's like sort of towards the beginning where all of a sudden you hear a scream and then he's just kicking ass. Like, good on you, I guess. Like, if you can kick ass, go ahead and kick ass. But it the scene felt really weird, but I thought the choreography was really good. It didn't have quite as much slow motion stuff. It really just felt like good hand-to-hand combat kung fu-y kind of stuff. So I you know, there were moments in this that weren't completely overrun. That sounds too negative, but that didn't fall back on that completely. I thought that was actually a pretty cool fight scene.
See, I think that one actually took me out of it a little bit. That
well, it goes on for about 4 minutes too long.
You're talking about the one before the hunt?
Yeah.
Yeah, where it's all of a sudden, for no reason, Monty is just in the middle of a bunch of people, and they're all forming the ring and taking turns fighting him. Okay.
Yeah, that one was like a little odd.
Well, it was exposition by virtue of like claws by showing like whoever these weird other people are, like that was supposed to establish that there is this other group of people, but there was no exposition other than fighting. So it was fighting exposition, which never goes well.
See, I took it the first time I watched it, I felt like it was more of like a racist reaction to this foreigner by these like thugs who all for some reason had these strange like cat claw weapons that later on obviously it makes sense, like, oh, these are the guys who are, you know, in league with the beast, but that wasn't clear at the time. And it wasn't until the end of the movie where I was like, oh, I remember those people.
Yeah. And the, my first impression was just like, it was, you know, lowbrow entertainment for the peasants, you know, which is a thing in medieval Europe and, you know, medieval everywhere that, you know, some people just like to fight for their entertainment. And I guess we have octagons for that in our day and age, but, it did feel weird, even though it made sense later. It felt weird that there is so many people in this Enlightenment era French village that are kung fu experts and have all these weapons that you would find in Japan, not in France. So that's the thing that took me out. You know, not the length of the fight scene or anything, or the fact that it was there, because that was pretty cool. And you do need to establish Mani as a badass. So I thought that was fine, but it does make sense. All these people coming and attacking him and the way they did it and their inexplicable martial arts experience is very strange.
There's a lot we don't understand about the French Renaissance.
Truer words have ne'er been spoken.
I don't know if that's one of them.
Nice. Well, I think that that might do it here. Anything else that you guys want to touch on before we wrap up? I think we'll probably do our rating here. We don't want to forget that. That's important. Yeah. So, Andy, why don't you go first? So 1 to 10 on a scale of your choosing. Everybody can choose a scale. Take whatever time you need to come up with that.
I will give this on a scale of 1 to 10, I will give this 7 busty French servant girls.
Hmm. I feel like that's a Christmas carol. Lords a-leaping and busty French servant girls. Jer, how about you? What would be your rating and your scale on that?
I would give it 8 of 10 anachronisms.
Nice. I like that. I'll go next. And Andy, I'm going to steal one of your phrases here. I'm going to give it 7.5 French mullets out of 10.
Man, they'll love those mullets.
Yep. They're great. Period true, I'm sure. Lee, on to you. What would your rating and scale be?
I think I'll give it 6 out of 10 roundhouse kicks.
Boom! Nice.
Repetitive roundhouse kicks.
Yes.
Thank you, Chuck Norris.
Thank that just you, goes without saying. Hawaiian Chuck Norris.
And last but not least, Mark, what about you? What is your rating and scale?
I'm going to give it 8 hidden arms.
Ooh, nice. Creepy, creepy hidden arms.
Out of 10 hidden arms.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ganesha.
Desperately needing a manicure. Nice. All right, well, that wraps that up for this hidden gem here. Our next full episode will be about Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, which we are very excited about. So next time you hear from us, we will be discussing that and doing Ruprecht impressions like they're going out of style, as we are wont to do as fans of the film. Gentlemen, this was fun. I appreciate it. Until the next time, if you see a wolf in the forest, if it is a lion, just run. Just go. Run. If you see someone that says they're missing an arm, also run. I think that's about all I got.
You can't run from the beast. Come on.
Maybe not while watching the Paralympics.
That's pretty much. Ooh, good point.
And ouch.
TV doesn't count.
And don't piss off French Canadians.
Well, yeah. That's a given. Well,
that goes without saying, Hugh Jackman. All right. I don't know what that meant.
Are you calling me Phil Jackson? I mean,
no,
Phil Jackson.
I am now Phil Jackson. Zen-like basketball coach of the Chicago Bulls and some other teams I don't know.
Yeah. And not French-Canadian at all.
And probably not French-Canadian, not with that mustache, mister. Oh, good lordy. This deteriorated rapidly. Gentlemen, may the force be with you.
And also with you.
Isn't Hugh Jackman Australian?
Yeah, I was thinking of Wolverine.
Ah, okay.
The character that, he played.
I don't think anybody said moist. We totally forgot about
it. Oh, yeah, no! That's right.
Oh, well.
Moist.
I'm sure with your editing wizardry, you can add, you could substitute some words.
It'll be moist. It'll be
Mr. Black.
It'll be super obvious. Stephen Hawking, Mac and Talk. Moist.
Moist.